This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good afternoon, everyone. That's better. Let's wake you all up. Okay, do you want to change places now? Right. My name is Saad Medhat from the New Engineering Foundation. I've listened to the sort of the presentations this afternoon, the session before lunch, and it was rather exciting to see sort of the benefits from industrial point of views, as well as the benefits to the learner, particularly the last case study when the highlight was on the benefits to the learner himself or herself. And obviously the apprenticeship program is so important program, but it's almost like we're rekindling sort of the golden age of apprenticeships. There are obviously interesting remarks to be made about that, recognizing the context and the timing of such a development in the UK, in the skills landscape. Raj introduced me as Professor Saad Medhat, and actually I started as an apprentice. So it is so vital that, you know, for apprentices to be able to actually see through their development if they wanted to pursue further education and higher education and beyond. I started life with Philips initially as a trainee, as an apprentice, and carried on to gain my PhD and professorships and so on. So, you know, I don't see any reason why apprentices cannot actually pursue, should they wanted to, become more academically inclined. So, moving on to the New Engineering Foundation, we are an educational charity, a private charity that supports about 150, 160 further education colleges around the UK. Our focus is very much on professional development, encouraging the professional development of science, engineering, and technology and related subjects and the staff within the FE system. Because if you look at the sector, in fact, we conducted a piece of study back in 2004, which highlighted the level of professional development in the FE sector was 1 hour every 10 years, and the average age was above 50. So if you're heading towards retirement, you're not really interested in professional development anymore. That was the attitude then. So we needed to do something about that. The second area that we focus on is the area of knowledge and technology exchange in the FE system, the FE sector, and using that as a means to drive the skill activisms that Raj mentioned, drive the connectivity between business and industry, between business and colleges, and indeed drive that linkage between ECHE and FE. And we had a conference, in fact, 2 days ago. Neil Stewart and associates have staged a conference to address the ECHE, FE, and offering ECHE in the FE system. The apprenticeship program, obviously, it has a number of benefits, which was well articulated in the previous session. So I'm not going to dwell on that, but I want to pick up a couple of points here, the motivational aspect, particularly in the last presentation when the presentation addressed sort of the remedial aspects and the challenges, the individual personal challenges, as well as the educational challenges, the status associated with the vocational development. And I suppose the acid test is 80 sectors are participating in this sort of development. And indeed, the Kessler presentation talked about improved productivity, so as the BEST presentation talked about improved productivity and the cross-feed between the different disciplines. So the benefits are absolutely there, and we shouldn't be doubting them. And that's, I suppose, beyond the political rhetoric. If you look at the government, why are they pushing sort of with more apprentices, not only to help with the unemployment sort of aspect, because it's only a drop in the ocean, but when you look at the 35,000 sort of places for advanced and higher apprentices over the next 2 years, it's still quite a significant funded places in the system. And it's an interesting here, we don't actually talk about student loans as you experience in the higher education sector. So it's something that to bear in mind as well, so far as the opportunities that apprenticeships do present to people. But the issue for me is we look at the apprenticeship system and we sort of talk about the nostalgic apprenticeship system that we used to have in the 60s and the 70s, and I've certainly gone through the 70s, now I'm going to give my age. But sort of beyond that, if you look at the current sort of system now, is it actually fit for the purpose in terms of the new areas of economic growth that we are likely to experience and indeed are experiencing now? That's one question. So are we really preparing just for the trades, for the old trades? Are we looking beyond the immediacy yes, you do need them, and the decoration, the wiring, and so on and so forth, they were not going to go, they will continue to be here, but are we going beyond that? If you look at the landscape that we are experiencing today, and this is a very small snippet of the activities that we are experiencing over the next decade or two in terms of, for example, the low-carbon industrial strategy and the impact on employment, the impact on changing the actual way in which we deliver training and education, on the way that we actually prepare curriculum, and the sort of curriculum that we need, the sort of knowledge base that we actually need to acquire, to deliver the job at that point in time, so having it at the right place at the right time. So renewables, nuclear, the nuclear commissioning, decommissioning is a vast area that needs a lot of people. Do we have the people to respond to that? Looking at the low-carbon electric vehicle manufacturing, for example, if tomorrow Nissan, for example, decide to switch, and they are actually switching to manufacturing electric vehicles in Sunderland, then are we ready to, and we have the capability to respond? A piece of research that we've conducted in the area of emerging technologies, emerging markets, suggested that the state of readiness of the FE system, it's near on nil, in fact, in terms of actually reacting. So it's, you know, there are few practices, but very few practices that, and you know, colleges or indeed private providers who are actually are geared up to deliver at that sort of level. Nanotechnology in everything we do now, whether you're dealing with food processing or whether you're dealing with textile manufacturing or indeed hip replacement, you know, nanotechnology is an area that is expanding at a phenomenal rate. Do we have the apprentices to actually deal with the setting up the rigs here, managing the process, managing the flow, and the knowledge and the know-how to support such a development? I doubt it. And we need to do a lot of work in that area. The refurbishment of the national grid will require a phenomenal amount of apprentices over the next 2 decades, 3 decades perhaps, nationally and at European level. So the opportunities are phenomenal for us to actually address this. From a new engineering point of view, from the new engineering foundation point of view, we are concerned with three particular sort of areas that we would like to bring to your attention. And it was sort of alluded to in the various presentations today, this morning, and earlier, later on in the early afternoon, one of which is the qualification. I think the Kessler presentation mentioned the lack of recognizable qualification. We talked about specialism as well in a fairly superficial way, I have to say, and we mentioned quite a bit about progression. So moving on, looking at those individually fairly quickly, just to emphasize some of the challenges that we need to address in terms of almost like refurbishing the apprenticeship system to make it fit for the purpose for tomorrow's economic development. And if we look at the qualification system, yes, it's a high status award, indeed. But if we do have actually an end qualification to it, the net effect on that will actually increase and improve the completion rate of those. We looked at the completion rate, which said earlier on it's about 140,000. Actually, in fact, only 2 weeks ago it was about 130,000, so that jumped up to 140,000. I believe the accountancy field has impacted the numbers and skewed the numbers somehow. But nonetheless, whatever the number is, you still look at the actual attrition rate, it's quite high, and the completion rate is not particularly exciting. Yes, we've made a huge strides in terms of moving the overall system forward. If we do have a qualification, then you do have the ability of mobility of the individual between sectors, and indeed if they wanted to go abroad as well. And it will impress employers. So currency and recognition of a qualification remains to be high on the agenda in the age of qualificationism, if I can call it that, so we do need to recognize that. And it needs to be well established along the vocational routes. Yes, we have a fairly arduous, complicated, unclear vocational system in the UK. and it needs clarity of purpose, and it needs clarity in terms of the progression and the connectivity between the different ways to address education and learning. When I talk to employers, the majority of employers talk about, for example, level 3 plus, and level 3 plus is very much about addressing the beyond the technical aspects, but addressing sort of the value added, sector specific or knowledge specific in that in that area to address the productivity and the improvement. So we need to look at the linearity in those qualifications. Specialism is another area which I mentioned that the emerging technologies require really to deepen the knowledge provided with the apprenticeships, not just having it sort of an ocean wide and inch deep. Looking at the progression, you know, and the word was mentioned today, it's about 6% and 4%. In fact, the conference we had 2 days ago even challenged the 4% progression to higher level education. And the UVAC a piece of study that was commissioned on behalf of the government highlighted anything, you know, in the order of 2 to 4% the actual progression to higher level. Not necessarily higher, you know, degrees, but potentially foundation degrees. So better alignment is needed. Progression will provide that desire to continue with learning, and it will obviously provide that cachet, that recognition that I've talked about. What we're doing about some of this sort of stuff is we're trying to encourage the professional development of technicians and apprenticeships. Currently, the paper which talked about the Skills for Growth paper highlighted the need to address the world, the a new modern class of technicians, and within that, the need for professionalizing the technician occupation. So we brought in together now, under the leadership of Lord Sainsbury, we brought in together the Science Council, the Engineering Council, the Health Department to create a generic registration system, professional registration system that provides that standard, if you like, that reflect, you know, that companies and employers actually need to overcome that the issues with linearity, the issues with the lack of professionalism that are associated with these sort of occupations, to give it the status and the and to provide a single voice, hopefully, for the technician area. Another area that we are pushing forward with, and Kevin Brennan talked about this morning, and we're working very closely with him on pushing this forward, as well as with the opposition, with David Willetts, to see, and there's, you know, cross-parliamentarian sort of buy-in into this concept of technical college status, a total systems approach to addressing the technical skills in this country. And people, employers, when you talk to employers, they want STEM-specific skills, good level of STEM skills, good sector-specific skills, and a combination of generic skills and transferable skills in the format of a technician or an apprentice. A joined-up approach to STEM staff development. You go to colleges, and as a college governor, I see sort of the delivery done in silos in these colleges. You need to have a much more coordinated and joined-up approach to STEM development, an alignment between occupational standards, professional standards, and indeed the qualification system, which sometimes and more than often actually lags behind the expectations of employers. You know, turning around occupational standards sometimes 2 years plus in the technical subjects. So these are the sort of things that we are addressing. And I believe, I would like to leave you with three key words, is the landscape for the FE system over the next decade will experience rationalization of provision, and not every college will be delivering basically motor vehicle maintenance, for example. They shouldn't be even delivering all that stuff. We have enough of that, and it should be concentrated. So a drive towards specialism. You have a fantastic agenda around the low-carbon agenda, for example, the development of new materials like composites materials, and that will enable the colleges to claim its role in the development of skills, including apprenticeships. And the binding agenda in all this is really we need to be a bit more innovative in the way in which we deliver, we engage, and we purpose some of our qualification systems. That will drive a fairly differentiated educational system. On the one hand, you have the sort of the economic provision that we need, desperately need, and on the other hand, you have the social education needs that equally is important, but at least not every college is doing everything, all of which will attract inward investment, will attract foreign direct investment in the country, and indeed will create wealth in the UK. Thank you very much indeed.